Week 11 in the books. Brent Rollins joining me as always from PFF, from Rivals. Pretty big week there, Brent. A couple of top four teams go down. Indiana is 10-0 for the first time in the history of their program. And Lane Kiffin was 0-4 against top five teams. Now he is 1-4. So week 11 was off to a pretty good start. And it's not done yet either, by the way. So you still got number eight down 11 points to Utah as we speak, almost going into the half. So college football is wacky. It continues to be wacky, and it's going to be a lot of fun the rest of the way.
Well, you got the day started off with the big upset, Georgia Tech taking care of business against Miami, and then the latter two games with Ole Miss and Georgia and then Alabama LSU were just physical beatdowns. To the point where it was, you're like, oh gosh, like somebody wave the white flag, throw in the towel kind of business with both of those games, honestly.
Well, which one you want to start with? You want to start with Georgia?
Sure.
Start with Georgia. What a start. I mean, a perfect pitcher, perfect start going on the road. I think it's I'll say it again, it's the hardest thing to do in college football, just the crowd, and it affects every week. It affects teams. When Georgia comes out and hits Jackson Dart three plays in a row, about the last times they hit him the rest of the game. And they get a couple sacks. They force the INT, like literally everything about it good. Their offense comes on the field. They pound the football, fourth and goal, go for it. Get it on fourth and short, go up 7-0, Brent. And the dogs are rolling. And that's where my notes stop for Georgia, because there was not much left to talk about that went their way.
Yeah, and the interesting thing was there, like, even more to that is Dart comes out of the game with what looked like an ankle injury, but not really. I thought it was his Achilles more than anything. I didn't see his ankle turn. But anyway, he comes out, and Simmons comes in, the lefty, and just starts bing, 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 completion after completion after completion. And one of the biggest plays of the game to me was – third and like 12 or 13 or something like that. He hits a slant route where Georgia is just way off and almost concedes the route, sets up a fourth and two, fourth and one that they go for and then get versus punt and momentum just fully on your side. Once they got that, they quick plays, go down and score. Now it's a ball game. Dart comes back in the game, and Ole Miss just absolutely, completely, utterly dominated Georgia's offensive line the rest of the game.
Yeah. And it's interesting because you've seen these Ole Miss offenses and you've seen them in the past struggle in the offensive line, and that was the biggest difference. But I think one thing that continues to be a little bit of a weakness when you watch Georgia is they can't cover long enough to let their rush get home a lot of times. And you saw that again, like you just talked about, just getting off of press very easily in the slot, getting off of press, you know, being able to get rid of the football pretty quickly when they needed to. They orchestrated. They went well. The weather was sloppy. It wasn't good. I'm always surprised, man, by Georgia firing off the ball, kind of getting their hands on people and playing run when they've thrown the football like 8 of the last 10 times. Like
14 out of 18, game. First and 10. Yeah, 14 out of 18, the first start of the game.
Rush the passer, dude. Like, I mean, I played football, I played defensive line. Like, it's a trend. You know, they're not trying to run the football. They're not good at it. Like, rush, pin your ears back, rush the passer, react to run. And they struggled, man. They didn't look good. And then, I mean, do you want to do it now? Because the offense just, it's not very good. And I don't know where you want to point to. I mean, there were some shots that I think Beck could have taken down the field to Arian Smith. And you saw that on the TV copy when you go hard play action. I thought in the second half, again, they come out and they manufacture offense with false pulls and, you know, look over reverse here and then go over here. And like they did a really good job with that. I don't know why they don't start the game with that. If they're going to continue to run the ball from the shotgun where you don't get an advantage because your quarterback's not going to pull it. He's not going to run the football. The weapons on the out, a lot of frustration. A lot of frustration when you watch Georgia and their offense this season, and it continues. Beck, I saw a stat, but I want you to go ahead and talk about their offense, and I got a stat for you, and I'm going to ask you a trivia question.
Okay, I'll probably get it wrong, but the big thing for me with them offensively is when, like you talked about with that, when you don't have a quarterback that's not a, or this not a running threat, you have to be very diverse in your run game. And when you sprinkle in things like reverse, jet sweep, counter reverse, all those types of things, you can have some level of consistency in the run game. But this was a game you needed the run game because you just got flat dominated on the offensive line. They actually blocked Walter Nolan pretty well. They just couldn't block the edges. Umami Ellen got what he wanted in the as a pass Prince rusher.
Got what he wanted. Like, and it's also frustrating when Delp's there to chip, and you and he still gets beat around the edge. Like, dude, if you're chipping, you chip the outside shoulder. Like, you use the tackle that's inside of you, and that's not a hard. It's not a hard thing to do, honestly, and you should never give up a sack in that instance ever. You ready for the stat of the night?
Okay.
Carson Beck is the second quarterback in Georgia football's 132-year history to throw 12 interceptions in a six-game span. Can you name the other one?
Mike Bobo.
Yes, that is correct.
I figured there was some element there of that, but yeah, that's – you think about who they are, they're a team that turns the ball over a lot every game. Yeah. But
I think Georgia was very much in this game. And I think this game might go different, but that Frazier fumble was enormous. That was an enormous fumble. They're moving the football. The first drive was really good. They get a field goal, moving the football again. He puts on the turf again. And I'm okay saying this. He's their best back. Like, he is by far their best back, and he runs hard, and he makes things happen. But you put the ball on the deck with Kirby, you ain't going to get very many touches. And that's the reason he got in the doghouse in the first place. So your best playmaker now is on the sidelines because he's fumbled. You know, the offense is what it is, but I don't expect it to get fixed. I do spin it forward to next week, and I say, you're at home, and it's a different game. The game is different when you're at home. So I don't just all of a sudden go, Tennessee's going to guaranteed to win next week. But if you're waiting for Georgia to change and for Georgia to all of a sudden become explosive, I don't think that's going to happen. I just don't. I don't think they're all of a sudden going to hit a switch and things are going to get drastically better all of a sudden.
If you're a Georgia fan, the thing you have to hope is that you survive somehow the game against Tennessee, and then UMass and Tech, who's not great defensively, you find some level of confidence. You find some mojo back, and then you get in and you have the break to prepare for an opponent and you match up, all that sort of stuff. But next week is your Super Bowl. It is survival. But the last thing, one of the last things for me with this game is the credit to the other side. Kiffin talked about it after the game. After we got completely and utterly stomped, you know, we as in Ole Miss got stomped last year, we said, hey, we're going to the portal. We're buying a team that will compete physically with that team. And they did it. And that's what they did. And they played for this game. And the other thing was just the game planning part. They throwing on first down, attacking the middle field. They only threw three balls over 20 yards, which was, they were like a quarter of their attempts previous to this were that. So they coached for that game, and he talked about it, and they did.
We haven't seen anyone go into the portal at a mass level and be very successful. I'm not sure this might not change some people's minds because, I mean, they literally just took their whole defense and went, like, plug and play, all the D linemen, Chris Paul at linebacker, and they literally changed the way their whole defense was played. And I mean, Lane Kiffin didn't have to do that on offense because Lane Kiffin knows how to coach offense. He knows how to develop offense. He had a quarterback that stayed, who continued to play. He played well when he came back in the game. You could tell he was still hobbled. He played well. But, like, moving on from there, somebody in the chat, what about the play calling? Bobo loves the screen game. And this is from Carson Beck for Heisman. So I wonder what team he cheers for. But I also think, Brett, that I think he's – I don't think he trusts his quarterback anymore. And I think it's a part of the game plan that you've got to be more screen oriented. And they didn't want to throw the football down the field because of the decision-making from Carson Beck week in, week out. The receivers dropping balls, number one in the nation now at drop passes, Georgia receivers, Georgia tight ends, like, continue to drop it. It's got to be manufactured, and it's a struggle. And
I would take it a step further. I don't know what he trusts.
Yeah.
If anything, like what, like, do you trust to protect? No. Do you trust decision making? Take care of the football? No. Do you like that? I think to me, that's a, as much as anything. I know what Kalen DeBoer trusts. He trusts giving the ball to Jalen Milroe after a bye week and letting him run it.
Well, and we had talked about Jalen Milroe looking like he was sluggish, you know, and the reason I thought, the reason I didn't even doubt picking Alabama was because of mobile quarterbacks against LSU. They've proven it time and time again. Like we saw it with Sellers this year with South Carolina. He plays that whole game. It's a different game, probably. South Carolina's probably in a different spot. LSU probably doesn't come back. We saw it with Marcel Reed. No clue. Not a clue what to do. I like what I'm seeing from Alabama's offense, too. I mean, I like the perimeter passing. When Milroe stays patient and Milroe is okay just attacking the edges and then scrambling and being who he is. I like their run game, too. It's changed. Their run game, they do more counter. They're doing more super counter. They're still using him in the run game when
There's
they need
threat.
To. But, I mean,
he's
Alabama's
always the threat.
They're getting better, though. Their defense has improved and gotten better. Like, this is a team that, you know, they might be able to, in a situation where they might be able to do something and prove something in the playoffs, they can continue to grow and get better because the defense has clicked and played a lot better the last several weeks.
Yeah, this Milroe, the 12 carries, 185 yards. And it's one, you and I are a year apart in age. Do you remember playing with Bo Jackson on the original Tecmo Bowl? Did you ever?
Yep, couldn't catch
that's
him.
That's what he looks like. I mean, he looks like he's just toying with guys in certain times of the game. And it's, and when he's fresh and you can see it, you can see the difference tonight in this game. Somebody who was kind of fresh and, but then struggled during the game and then late in the very last part of the game, turned it over and they lost is Cam Ward in Miami. This was kind of, it was a win, not if, right?
Yeah, it was, it was the worst I've seen him look. Like they've gone on spurts where they didn't play well, but it wasn't always him. But Cam Ward was missing throws. Like he was consistently missing a lot of throws that he doesn't miss, and he's always got the nonchalant nature in the pocket. And it came back to bite him, by the way, because Tech, I love what they did. They kept chasing. They kept chasing. You can't let up on a Cam Ward pass rush. Like, he's going to spin out and run around and run around. Like, you got to keep chasing him. And I thought they had a good plan. The biggest shock of the game for me was the reason I thought this would be a runaway. I thought Miami would win their first blowout game in a while because Miami's run defense is always good. Like, you can count on their defensive line and stopping the run. Top 10 in the nation, like, every week under 100 yards, that's what they do. And that's all Georgia Tech wanted to do was run the football. Like, again, Buster Faulkner, he's a dude, man. Like, he's just one of the best in the business. And he just plays the hat game. And he had Philo at running back. And he had Philo at quarterback. And when they needed to throw, he put Philo at quarterback because King's playing without an arm, without the ability to throw the football. And they're running him and still having success. They attack the edges like crazy against Miami. And listen, Miami's a team, because of how they're built, Cam Ward has to wear the S on his chest. He has to wear it every week. Didn't play great to start the football game. It's been enough in the past for him not to play great in spurts. It wasn't enough today, and they didn't get enough stops.
And it puts them in a very interesting position. I had talked about the Syracuse game on the road to end the regular season. Like, they need to be in the ACC championship game. And maybe, you know, they might have to win out potentially to be in, given the lack of wins and whatnot with their schedule. That was, it was the, I did see his number. It was the 10th win this season already by an unranked opponent over a top 10 opponent. So a lot of chaos. Tech's first win over top five team since 2009. So,
well, and they got a top 10 win to start the season against FSU. Obviously, that wasn't a top 10.
Sorry, top five. I screwed that up. Top five.
Top 10 win, which wasn't. But Georgia Tech doing what they needed to do, owning the time of possession, played clutch defense when they needed to. Another thing Miami and Cam Ward Cam Ward usually comes up clutch in clutch moments. Their first three, fourth downs, they were 0 for 3.
0 for 3.
And yep, he would have been better. He needed to do better in all of them. Like, could have hit Restrepo over the middle, could have hit the on the rollout, could have hit another play that was wide open in the flats. Like, he had a bad day. And because Miami's team isn't great on the isn't a complete team, this is what happens. But golly, dude, I don't know who's really good in college football. Indiana, they go to 10-0, but they look sloppy in the second half. Like, I haven't seen them, you know, their QB started to get
no
hit.
Offense.
No. They at one point I saw they ran like 14 plays in 5 drives, you know, turn the ball over, punts. Their quarterback was getting hit a little bit more. That he hasn't been getting pressured a bunch, and he does such a great job, Rourke, of getting the football out. And, dude, their offense in the first half, like, if you want to see an offense with a plan, like, watch Indiana. Like, but the state of Michigan, for some reason, gives Indiana problems. Nobody else does in all of college. Or state of Michigan, yeah, just they're the only ones that can score or get a lead on them. But, like, the double move palooza, you know, the hitch and go for a touchdown, but the triple move near the goal line where they come in. Like, it's just they have a plan. They know what they're seeing. They know what they're going to get, but didn't play great in the second half. Should have had a bigger lead in the first half, and it almost came back to bite them.
Yeah, and on the bright side for them, I mean, obviously, other than being 10-0, they get 2 weeks. Like, Ohio State's 2 weeks from now. So,
and they got banged up. Ellison was banged up. The receivers, they were. Indiana was banged up, and the thing about them is they don't have the depth that a lot of teams have. They don't have the class after class of recruiting that they've stacked upon each other. Cignetti was like, wait a minute, I have like 30 guys in the portal, and I need to go replace all 30. That's not an easy thing to do, but Indiana 10-0, never been done before by Indiana. That's pretty dang cool.
Some other kind of grown-up wins, I guess you could say, in the Big Ten. Oregon took care of business against Maryland, kind of just did what they do, played around a little bit, even
in the beginning.
Yeah, and then Penn State, I thought was a good bounce back win for them, taking care of business against Washington. So the Big Ten is setting itself up to where, especially now with Indiana being potentially 11-1 at worst, that 4 playoff teams for them is very much a likely.
Well, and the interesting thing is, you never know how schedules are going to work, but the way it's set up, Indiana, Oregon, and Penn State, Indiana, Oregon, and Penn State all don't play each other. So Their best teams just happen to not play each other this season. And so, yeah, you're looking pretty good. And meanwhile, you got the SEC that, you know, it's going to be interesting.
Crazy. There's so many different ways it could still finish.
I don't even know who the flip's going to play in the SEC championship game, for gosh sakes. Like,
no.
It's going to be a 17-way tie probably to see who does that. And Texas and Texas A&M playing last week will have something to do with that. And that's – Texas, by the way, looked pretty daggum good. And that's the first time we've seen Florida, like, dump trucked. You know, I mean, yeah. they've been hanging in, and they were down their top two receivers, their top running back, their top two quarterbacks, and everyone
else. Different when you start the game with the Yale transfer quarterback versus
and their right guard. Like, they're literally down a ton of guys. They've been fighting like crazy, but Texas definitely, you know, stomped them out. What else happened, man? Like, it's craziness.
Speaking of adult wins,
Notre Dame beat the crap out of Florida State, which is normal. Yeah.
The place to me is when you think about who truly controls their destiny as a playoff contender, Coach Prime, Colorado. They win. They their next three games: Utah, which, by the way, Utah's okay right now, at Kansas, which Kansas is playing better, took care of Iowa State today, and Oklahoma State to finish the season, and then the Big 12 championship.
The Big 12.
Right. So you're talking about three of the five worst teams in the Big. However many 12, it's more than 12, obviously, but
like 16.
Like,
hey,
yeah.
And here's the thing to that, Brent. First of all, here's what I learned with my many years of covering this, that then in the beginning I was so wrong. I'm always like, well, that team sucks. They'll never win. Like, they're terrible. Another thing you learn down the stretch is when you got nothing to lose, you can be dangerous. I mean, you've got nothing to lose. Utah didn't lose all their talent. But I tell you what, Brandon Rose coming in at quarterback this week changed everything about him. Like, his mobility, his accuracy. Bernard all of a sudden gets going. I mean, it just, you know, so Rose's ability to run, Rose's ability to throw, obviously it's 1 week against BYU, but Morgan Scalley in that defense is always good. Utah always played great, crazy defense. Literally, they just had to get short possessions, like short fields for their offense, and just try to get something going, and they haven't been able to do anything. So if that takes hold, some of those games down the stretch that really matter, Kansas has been in every game they've played. So
lost a lot of close
games. I'm not ready to crown anyone from the Big 12, but interesting. BYU will be very interesting against Utah. If that's a loss and Utah finishes that off, now, you know, that opens the door up for more SEC teams. Kudos, by the way. I thought Clemson was going to pull a Clemson. Like, I'm not going to lie. Like, they look bad to start. Like, they looked awful.
Yes. Virginia Tech got a Virginia Tech type touchdown.
Yes, their defense was playing great, but Virginia Tech, you know, they scored on defense. Cade Klubnik really rebounded. He looked shaky, man. I literally wrote in my notes, Clemson is offensively what they have been in the past. I wrote that down, and then I had to cross it off because Klubnik, when he scrambles and they hit that, you know, 50-yard touchdown to Moore, when he scrambles and runs and lowers his shoulder. He runs physical, man. He runs really, really hard when he does run. He runs more like a running back. But I love the way they responded to adversity, to things not going their way early. Like, I was ready to kind of bury them for a second, and then all of a sudden they started getting it together, and I was impressed with the way they finished the game, and it looked really good doing it.
The team you gave flowers to earlier in the week came back, got another victory. That would be the Arizona State Sun Devils, who are now 7-2 on the year.
How are they not ranked?
They should be this week. Because they got Kansas State and BYU coming up the next 2 weeks, so they're going to be a factor in the playoff. And the other game we kind of looked at as the give flowers was two teams that had climbed back to relevance, and South Carolina stomps and handles Vandy, and they are 6-3 and rolling. And is that one of the things where they might actually, the committee might say, hey, this team has dominated and only lost the 2 points at Alabama, lost against Ole Miss, and their quarterback got hurt against LSU, but they're a playoff team. Is there any world where that happens, you think?
No.
If they finish out 9-3, beating Clemson, by the way, if they beat Clemson in the final game.
No, absolutely not. It's not even in consideration. You know why, Brent? Because they got stomped out by Ole Miss. If they play that game competitive, maybe we're having a discussion. But when you get stomped out, like, I don't think there's any way, shape, or form.
As one of those three losses. But still, if they finish out, they still got Missouri, Wofford, Clemson, but finishing out 9-3 would be huge for them and Beamer.
It's still a great year. And Shane Beamer did a great job recruiting, getting dudes in there. Arizona State, the cool thing about them was Scatbo was out too. Their best back, dude that was killing it, was doubtful for the game, didn't even play. But Leavitt played good at quarterback, actually. I mean, good is relative when you play Arizona State. Like, the quarterback play right now is not – we're not trying to throw the ball like 50 times, but 16 for 25 and three touchdowns. So good when it needed to be, and it was – you know, 160 yards passing, but more importantly, in the red area when you had to throw it, he threw it well. And Arizona State, man, just kudos again. Just look good, man. Just look good doing it. Texas Tech was in the game with Colorado, by the way. That was a good game. That was back and forth.
It was a good game. Sanders made some plays. Speaking of 2 weeks, by the way, to get healthy, Bryson Daly has 2 weeks to rest up for Notre Dame as Army stays unbeaten. And the dude – toted it 36 times, 36 of the 64 carries they had for 153 and two touchdowns after missing the previous week.
Not fully healthy.
That's man-child of the week. Props to you. So now sets up a big game in a couple weeks against Notre Dame. I want to go back just to the bigger games of the day and looking at Ole Miss, Lane Kiffin specifically, him getting that win. What do you like, looking at that from a big picture perspective, how, I guess, to get over that hump for him, what do you think that means for them and him moving forward?
Well, I mean, there's something about like when you are a team that constantly gets there and then disappoints, like there's something about that that lives on your shoulders and you feel it. And there's something about it when you break through it that I think is big. Is this just what they needed? Is this that breakthrough? Because again, he was, 0-4 against top five teams. Every time they got in big games, minus the Alabama game, several years ago. No, that was, I'm sorry, that was Ole Miss, but not, that wasn't Lane Kiffin. That was Hugh Freeze. But they've struggled in those big games and those big moments, but just their team played with poise. Their team played good. So I do think it helps. And you look at Ole Miss, man, I don't see how they're not in the playoffs, Brent. I really don't. Like, I don't
Ten,
think they're gonna
they went
lose
out,
the
they're in.
and listen, this year is teaching us. If you want to look ahead at the next team and say it's a guaranteed win, you're an idiot. So
Correct.
I'm going to be an idiot and be that guy. I don't think Florida can beat them. I just don't think they're going to be able to stay with them, especially with all the injuries. I don't think Mississippi State can beat them. I mean, you're
No.
now the Egg
So
Bowl
that is
again.
a one that's yeah, it's a weird game. Always a weird
Well,
game.
all rivalry games, because of the hatred, is so awesome. Is it just some teams find another gear, and I don't know how to explain that either. And all the years of covering it is like, okay, now I see and I understand how this kind of crap happens. And again, Mississippi State will have nothing to lose, but Ole Miss set up good. And an interesting thing for when we start doing these two loss teams, here's another thing that's crazy, Brent. You start doing two loss teams, and you got Ole Miss and you got Alabama that are two of them, that doesn't bode well for Georgia. Like,
No.
head to head is going to push them above you. That's absolutely going to happen. So now Georgia's cheering for upsets to happen with those teams, or for one of them to get in the SEC championship game. And then if they do lose, even then it might not be penalized because it was an extra game. And so
That's a
it's.
fascinating scenario. And well, but people who are rooting, that realm, they're rooting for Utah right now. They're rooting for SMU and/or Miami to lose again, things like that, to where all those two conferences only get one team. That's for sure. That's a definite when you look at what people are sort of rooting for. If you're want to get multiple SEC teams, or you're a Georgia fan who happens to be listening.
And BYU just struggling like crazy. Again, that defense, the only reason BYU scored a touchdown in the first half was because of a kickoff return. And that Utah defense, I'm telling you, dude, it's always good, always good, always aggressive, always physical. Looks like BYU is in trouble, which would open some things up. So, all right, homie G, you got anything else, or we wrap this puppy down?
I mean, I did see that Nico left the game against Mississippi State, but Heupel said after the game it was more precautionary that they took him out, which I find it interesting that it was a like single digit game. It was like 8 points maybe difference when he took him out and kept him out. But that he should be ready to go for next week against Georgia. They talked about it on the broadcast tonight, Kirk and Fowler. It is an elimination game, I think.
Yeah.
Right. And I would almost think that for both teams. With
Yeah.
Ole Miss,
It,
with that
it
win,
it's a
with
it's 100% for both teams. It's 100%, just like Alabama LSU was. Like, it's in elimination, losers out. LSU's gone. Georgia Tennessee's gone. And Georgia can't lose at home to Tennessee, and I don't think that's going to happen. But Nico, I've seen over the past couple weeks, Brent, and we'll go more into this next week, but he's starting to underthrow those deep balls now. And I know it sounds stupid, but I love it for him, and it's needed. And they made some big plays in the passing game, and he's going to have to continue to do that. Samson's been toting rock, like just 30 carries today in the football game against Mississippi State. And but it's going to be an awesome showdown. I mean, it'll be great. And I'll be interested to see if the,
you can be in the house. I
yeah,
mean, it is
I
like
will.
15 minutes from here.
Yeah, I'll be there. I'm getting a little thing from that from Georgia. But like the interesting thing about that, what will be interesting to watch is the crowd. Like, is the crowd jacked up and excited? Because that atmosphere,
And staying
I've been everywhere,
positive.
dude. I've been everywhere in the country, and I'm just telling you, that atmosphere at night goes nuts as well as anybody. I would put them up against anybody in the country. But are they a little bit deflated and frustrated from what they've seen? Because I mean, I've seen a lot of, I've seen a very talented team underperform all year long, and I think that that's what happens. People get frustrated, people get upset, and sometimes boo, sometimes don't cheer as loud, and so the building will be interesting because if Georgia wants to win, get in the playoffs, make some noise, they're going to need it. They're going to need all that.
I would bet you hear Kirby in the press conference this week talk about needing the crowd in a big way and things of that nature because, like you said, if it, you know, it's middle of the second quarter and another interception or consecutive turnovers or things that have consistently happened for them over the past 4 to 5 weeks, the crowd might get a little antsy, a little negative.
You got any good questions? Is Frazier cold for Kirby for fumbles? Yes, absolutely. What about Carson? Carson's not going anywhere. I don't think there's another option right now on the roster that you're going to get put in there and say that's going to all of a sudden take me from pretty good to great.
No.
Like I don't see it. We went to practice this year, Brent, a little bit in the summer. I didn't see a guy that I thought was ready to do that. Now, the kid from Arizona State that came here,
Rashada. Yeah. Jaden Rashada.
He's an athlete, like really good athlete. Could that get the run game going? I don't see it. I don't think it'll happen. I think they've turned this over to Carson Beck, and he's just going to have to continue to play better. And but I
the thing think for them will be blocking. Like they have to be able to block Tennessee's front, and
which is by the way, nobody's done it all year. Nobody's consistently blocked Tennessee's front. They're that good. I mean, they are elite. They are deep. They just keep rotating in waves of 300 pounders that pressure the quarterback. If you get them in third, if you get in third and long, they got guys that can pin their ears back, get after the quarterback. If I was them, I'd put them on the right side and rush our left tackle because he really, really struggled today. It was on skates all game long. Mm-hmm. Any other good questions in the chat? Let's see.
you could go there, but I don't think we want to go there. Offensive coaches will be fired. That's never really, that's cutthroat. So who is in the SEC championship game if the favorites win out? That's interesting because A&M and Tennessee and Texas are at the top of the SEC standings currently. Tennessee and A&M are at 5-1, Texas at 4-1. I don't know that Tennessee will actually be a favorite at Georgia. I would think Georgia would still be favored.
I don't know. So, after what we've seen from Georgia the last several weeks, maybe not.
Very true. It is the tiebreakers are unreal bad and just confusing. And if all of them end up 10-2 and or with two conference losses, it's even worse.
If and Texas goes, wins there's out
a lot of
there,
random things. Yes, Texas is the one to me who they went out and or A&M. Texas and or
so,
Texas
so
A&M.
Right, yeah.
Whoever wins A&M that game.
Texas played last game of the year, like if they're both at the same spot in. Tennessee, if they went out, they only have one loss in the SEC.
Yep.
So they would be
other
in.
Team.
Huh?
Georgia, yes. If Georgia beats Tennessee, then you're looking at probably Alabama, I think.
Well,
Alabama, yeah,
Ole Miss is at 16.
A&M is still kind of in there, even if they have a second loss. Like
but
it's
Tennessee
it goes
would have
to a lot of
losses
weird.
In a tiebreaker against Alabama. So yes. Tennessee might be ranked higher than Alabama.
I have a website bookmark, somebody has it where you can pick the winners of the various games, and it gives you who goes, and it's very random. It's based on opponent record, conference record, things like that. It's crazy, but yes, it could. So here's the question: could, if you say you're Georgia, we'll speak from Georgia's perspective, even Ole Miss, either one of those teams, you run the table, you're 10-2, are you cool with not playing in the SEC championship game as long as 100%. You're in the playoffs? Because I think you are.
and here's the thing that's fun. Brent, I don't know that there's not going to be 10 teams that can win this thing. Legit, when we get in the playoffs.
I actually wrote that down to ask you. Sorry.
Huh?
Well, I wrote that down to ask you in my notes. Who can win the whole thing? Because I think that list is actually pretty long.
I think it's long, and it's never been like this since I've been covering the game for this many years. It was always the top of the food chain, and it was the big time recruiters, the big time recruiting classes that stacked that, and the people that you knew that could develop them. But the portal has changed every daggum thing because the developing isn't as important anymore. Now, listen, you still want to do it and you still need to do it, but it's not as important because you can go out and grab people if you got a cheddar. Like, I mean, you can go spend it. So, oh boy. I know
one thing. What we've seen from Alabama and Jalen Milroe when he has time off, that's one I don't want to bet. It's one I wouldn't bet against just because he's that much of a singular force combined with the other things from Alabama that they have talent wise. So they're on that list. Ohio State, Oregon.
Then you got Ohio State.
By the way, that game about put you to sleep. Sorry.
It was ungood. It was dreadfully Gus Johnson too. Did you hear Gus Johnson's fumble touchdown call? He was like, it's a fumble, and they pick it up. And Gus is usually like, like yelling and screaming. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be fun. Appreciate it.
So maybe we do that Wednesday, by the way, or when we do the preview. Have our list. Who's our list that can win the whole thing?
All right, we can do that.
Write it down for next week.
Faux shizzle. I think it'll be longer than it's ever been. And Indiana might be on the list. Boise State might be on the list. Like, you talk about weird. Like, what a weird season of college football. More weirdness coming. We will be here for the duration. We will continue to be here. And probably might do another ranking show on Tuesday. We'll see. We'll see what the schedule allows. But we'll definitely be here on Wednesday. If you like us, please hit the subscribe. Please hit the like. And if you don't, it's okay. There's plenty of other shows that probably got your name all over it. But we will see you guys next week.